Well, it is time for another episode of the Urantia Radio Podcast, and I'm really happy because we're going to talk about something that's always got my attention in the Urantia book, and it talks about the early history of what is called a variant of the evolutionary man and the appearance of different colored races a long time ago. And we're going to learn a little bit about the characteristics of each race and how they've survived over the years. And I hope that you'll find it entertaining as well as informative. And it does provide insight into our natures and our personalities. And we'll get right to it. You're listening to the Urantia Radio Podcast. All right, we're going to get about as politically incorrect as we could possibly get on the Urantia Radio Podcast. And I want to talk to you about the revelators, and the revelators being those people who reveal the information to us in the form of the Urantia book. They spend a lot of time talking about how different races appear on worlds of evolution, ours being no exception. There was a period around 500,000 years ago where an unusual event occurred in what is known as the Sangic family. And you can read about it in chapter, I think it's paper, section 3, but it's in the Earth history, the evolutionary races of color. And it talks about a woman who gave birth to 19 children over the course of so many years. And this was in an area which I think today is probably Pakistan, or maybe not far from the northwest part of India, probably Pakistan. And all of these children, they had different shades of skin tone. Their melanoma was different. And they had a couple of red children, and then they had a couple of yellow, and then they had a couple of blue, and then indigo, and also green and orange. Now, we learned that in that 500,000-year period, the orange race and the green race pretty much annihilated each other. And this would have been in the area of northern Africa. And then the red man migrated over to and was literally pushed out of Asia by the yellow man, which we know that the red man did come from Asia, and he went via the Bering Strait at a time when there was a land bridge. And this was, according to the Urantia Revelators, about 80,000 years ago. And what makes it interesting about that is that for a long time, the oldest fossils they could find of humans in North America were, I believe, the Clovis. And this was in New Mexico, the Clovis man. And those artifacts only were carbon dated to about 12,000 years ago. So for a long time, anthropologists and archaeologists have believed that the red man or whoever it is that came, they didn't call them the red man, they're called Native Americans, but we know them as the red men, the red race, and they say it was around 80,000 years ago. So the date, as time has gone on since I first read about it in grade school, it was the Clovis man, but now they keep pushing it back to 30,000 years, 40,000 years, and but regardless of whether it was 80,000 or 12,000, the fact is that we did have distinctive racial types that evolved. And these were the most evolutionary evolved form of humans. And they were right before the final upstep of the human race, which was Adam and Eve, when they introduced a seventh race, the violet race, which were the offspring of Adam and Eve. And they, as they grew to a nation of about 5 million, it was their progeny that mingled with the other races. And they explained to us that the blue race of Europe got most of the early offspring blood of Adam and Eve. They also say that the indigo race, because they were so far in Africa, that there wasn't a real opportunity for that amalgamation to take place while Adam and Eve were still alive, due in large part to the default of Adam and Eve. So that's sort of a thumbnail sketch. But what I like about this particular paper is that it tells us something revealing about ourselves, about who we are And what are characteristics are like? And it also states that the colored races serve a great purpose. They teach tolerance. There are a lot of social benefits to having these different colored races. And they're always antagonistic toward another. That's why they sort of migrated in their own direction. The blue offspring, they migrated northward to Europe and in Western Asia. The yellow race took on Southeast Asia and have been there ever since. The indigos migrated eventually down to Sub-Saharan Africa, where the climate was wonderful and there was very little climactic adversarial conditions. And then there's also the green and orange, and they sort of took over North Africa. And there was a little mixture later on. And one of the, and I'll read it to you, but one of the distinctive characteristics of the green race was that they were very tall people, 6.5, 7 feet. And they were later absorbed into the indigo race when the infighting between the orange and the green subsided. There were just literally remnants left, and these people were absorbed into the indigo race. And this would have occurred between, say, 300,000 years to about 40,000 BC. There was also a pre-existent race, and that's, I believe, I'm not sure about this, but I believe the Denisovans, what archaeologists and anthropologists, scientists call the Denisovans or Denisovans, I believe they're the pre-colored race, and their ancestors live on in the Eskimo. And even to this day, this Andonic race, which predated the colored races that appeared much, much later, the Andonic race actually led to the Neanderthal, which was another morph. What do they call that? They use that term a lot. When a virus adapts, it changes, right? There's so many... Everything goes a certain way, and then all of a sudden, evolution has this way of spontaneously, there's another variant. That's it. So the colored races were a variant of the original Homo sapien, which Andon and Fanta, which we've talked about on this program, were the first true humans. Primarily, not only because of their dexterity and their brain power, but because they were able to worship. And through that worship, they were able to connect, and that's when our world actually became something, when those two were born. So long story short, now we're at this period about 500,000 years ago. Everybody's migrating. Everybody's sort of taking their area of the world. And I want to just go through this. So from paper, what is 72? Section 72. The six Sangic races of Urantia. It says, on an average evolutionary planet, the six evolutionary races of color appear one by one. The red man is usually the first to evolve. And for ages, he roams the world before succeeding colored races make their appearance. The simultaneous emergence of all six races on Urantia and in one family was most unusual. The appearance of the earlier Andonites on Urantia was also something new in our system of Satania. On no other world in the local system had such a race of willed creatures evolved in advance of evolutionary races of color. So in many cases, as they outlined, there's the appearance of colored races that dot the history timeline. But on no other world except for our own, was there a pre-existent non-colored race that actually had soul potential. That's a different evolutionary track. So we're unique in that way. And then they go on and explain the different characteristics of each of the different races. And please, I hope that it doesn't. I know that today it's hard for people to talk about race, and nobody wants to be in a position to stereotype. But these are our superiors. These are our spiritual superiors. And they're sharing information on us. And I think it's worth taking a look at and learning from. So let's do that. So in this section, 72.3, the red man, these people were remarkable specimens of the human race, in many ways superior to Andon and Fanta. They were a most intelligent group and were the first of the Sangic children. This is known as the Sangic race as the colored peoples. They were the first of the Sangic children to develop a tribal civilization and government. They were always monogamous. Even their mixed descendants seldom practiced plural mating. In later times, they had serious and prolonged trouble with their yellow brethren in Asia. They were aided by their early invention of the bow and arrow, but they had unfortunately inherited much of the tendency of their ancestors to fight amongst themselves, and this so weakened them that the yellow tribes were able to drive them off the Asiatic continent. About 85,000 years ago, the comparatively pure remnants of the red race went en masse across to North America, and shortly thereafter, the Bering land isthmus sank, thus isolating them. No red man ever returned to Asia, but throughout Siberia, China, Central Asia, India, and Europe, they left behind much of their stock blended with the other colored races. When the red man had crossed over into America, he brought along much of the teachings and traditions of his early origin. The immediate ancestors had been in touch with the later activities of the world headquarters of the Planetary Prince, which goes into the Caligastia days. But in a short time after reaching the Americas, the red man began to lose sight of these teachings, and there occurred a great decline in intellectual and spiritual culture. Very soon, these people again fell to fighting so fiercely amongst themselves that it appeared that these tribal wars would result in the speedy extension of this remnant of the comparatively pure red race. Because of this great retrogression, the red man seemed doomed when, about 65,000 years ago, Anamanalantan appeared as their leader and a spiritual deliverer. He brought temporary peace among the American red men and revived their worship of the Great Spirit. Anamanalantan lived to be 96 years of age and maintained his headquarters among the great redwood trees of California. Many of his later descendants have come down to modern times among the Blackfoot Indians. As time passed, the teachings of Anamanalantan became a hazy tradition. Internecine wars were resumed, and never after the days of the great teacher did another leader succeed in bringing universal peace among them. Increasingly, the more intelligent strains perished in these tribal trial struggles. Otherwise, a great civilization would have been built upon the North American continent by this able and intelligent red man. So it was infighting that made them weak, and they were even more unprepared to face the Europeans by the time they arrived. After crossing to America from China, the northern red man never again came in contact with other world influences except the Eskimos, until he was later discovered by the white man. It was most unfortunate, that the red man almost completely missed the opportunity of being upstepped by the admixture of the later Adamic stock. As it was, the red man could not rule the white man, and he would not willingly serve him. In such a circumstance, if the two races do not blend, one or the other is doomed. So that adds some perspective in that when we think about, you know, and you hear a lot about today how the white man, and there's no question, they did some really bad things, and they decimated what was left of the red people. But it is interesting to note that there were also other conditions that had they not had the infighting that they had, they very well would still be in control of this continent, and they may have yet had a rising civilization, but it was cut short because they couldn't get along. Number two, the orange man. Now we're going to learn about this other species that we've never seen, that we've never heard about, science has never recognized ever being a skin tone or a melatonin that looked orange. The outstanding characteristic of this race was that their peculiar urge to build anything and everything, even to the piling of vast mounds of stone just to see which tribe could build the largest mound. Though they were not a progressive people, they profited much from the schools of the prince during the days of Caligastia before the rebellion, and sent delegates there for instruction. So back 500,000 years ago, just a brief side footnote for those who don't know, the planetary prince arrived on our world with the intent of civilizing us. And this was upon the appearance of the colored races. Now, you remember when the Urantia book talks about how on most worlds, races appear in first the red man, then the yellow, then the, and then on and on. On our world, that didn't happen. It was one family. And at that point, that triggered the event of the first revelation, which was the arrival of a spiritual community along with material, you know, the old, there were giants in those days, references in Genesis are littered with these references to the men who came down and took the sons of man for daughters, the sons of God, right? That's that period of Caligastia, when these sons of God came down and mated with the rest of us, the orange, the red, the blue, the yellow. They mated with us. And that's where those old stories find their source. So at the time of the planetary prince, some 500,000 years ago, they had set up a school in what is now the Persian Gulf. And this school was to teach the surrounding tribes, the orange, the red, the blue, all of these different colored tribes, civilization techniques, how to, you know, grow food, how to be civil, how to have relations, how to set up rules for controlling human beings. All of these cultural introductions took place, but unfortunately, because of the collapse of due to the rebellion, the whole plan went to waste. But there was a period when members of the different colored races would go to this civilization, and this is even pre-Dilmud. You know, this is pre-Tower Tower of Babel. This is long before any of that. Adam and Eve weren't to arrive for another 400,000 years. So the orange man did benefit from the prince's influence. Unfortunately, they didn't last. The orange race was the first to follow the coastline southward toward Africa as the Mediterranean Sea withdrew to the west. But they never secured a favorable footing in Africa and were wiped out of existence by the later arriving green race. But before the end came, the people lost much cultural and spiritual ground. There was a great revival of higher living as a result of their wise leadership of a man named Porchunta, the mastermind of this unfortunate race, and he ministered to them in their headquarters at Armageddon some 300,000 years ago. The last great struggle between the orange and the green man occurred in the region of the Lower Nile Valley in Egypt. This long drawn out battle was waged for almost 100,000 years, and at its close, very few of the orange race were left alive. The shattered remnants of these people were absorbed by the green and later by the arriving indigo man. But as a race, the orange man ceased to exist about 100,000 years ago. Now we get to the yellow man, number three. The primitive yellow tribes were the first to abandon the chase, establish settled communities, and develop a home life based on agriculture. Intellectually, they were somewhat inferior to the red man, but socially and collectively, they proved themselves superior to all of the Sangik peoples in the matter of fostering racial civilization. Because they developed a fraternal spirit, the various tribes, learning to live together in relative peace, they were able to drive the red man before they gradually expanded into Asia. They traveled far from the influence of the spiritual headquarters of the world. Again, it was in the Persian Gulf, so the people of the red race or the yellow race would have to travel all the way through India and then south and, you know, into Saudi Arabia, and I guess that would be Mesopotamia. And then, of course, they traveled far from the influence of the spiritual headquarters of the world and drifted into great darkness. Following the Caligastia apostasy, there occurred one brilliant age among this people when Singleton, about 100,000 years ago, assumed the leadership of these tribes and proclaimed the worship of the one truth. Singleton. The survival of comparatively large numbers of the yellow race is due to their intertribal peacefulness. From the days of Singleton to the times of modern China, the yellow race has been numbered among the more peaceful of the nations of Urantia. This race received a small but potent legacy of the later important Adamic stock. Then we get to the green man. The green race was one of the less able groups of primitive men. They were greatly weakened by the extensive migrations in different directions. Before their dispersion, these tribes experienced a great revival of culture under the leader of Phantad, some 350,000 years ago. The green race split into three major divisions. The northern tribes were subdued, enslaved, and absorbed by the yellow and the blue races. The eastern group was amalgamated with the Indian peoples of those days, and remnants still persist among them. The southern nation of the Green Man entered Africa, where they destroyed their almost equally inferior orange cousins. In many ways, both groups were evenly matched in this struggle, since each carried strains of a giant order, many of their leaders being 8 and 9 feet tall. So can you imagine this clash between these two groups of primitive humans? You've got on one side the green and the other side the orange, and they're battling over the sands of northern Africa. And these are like, I mean, could you imagine being 8, 9 feet tall and you're fighting another person? They would have indeed looked like giants, wouldn't they? That would explain there were giants in those days, partially. It goes on to say the remnants of the victorious green man were subsequently absorbed by the indigo race, the last of the colored peoples to develop and immigrate from the original Sangig center of race dispersion. And now we get to the blue man. The blue men were a great people. They early invented the spear and subsequently worked out the rudiments of many of the arts of modern civilization. The blue man had the brain power of the red man, associated with the soul and sentiment of the yellow man. The Adamic descendants preferred them to all of the later persisting colored races. The early blue man were responsive to the persuasions of the teachings of Prince Caligastia's staff and were thrown into great confusion by the subsequent perverted teachings of those traitorous leaders. Like other primitive races, they never fully recovered from the turmoil produced by the Caligastia betrayal, nor did they ever completely overcome their tendency to fight amongst themselves. About 500 years after Caligastia's downfall, a widespread revival of learning and religion of a primitive sort, but nonetheless real and beneficial, occurred. Orlandoff became a great teacher among the blue race and led many of the tribes back to the worship of the true God under the name of the Supreme Chief. This was the greatest advance of the blue race until those later times when this race was so greatly upstepped by the admixture of the Adamic stock. The European researchers and explorations of the Old Stone Age have largely to do with unearthing the tools, bones, and art craft of these ancient blue men, for they persisted in Europe until recent times. The so-called white races of Urantia are the descendants of these blue men, as they were first modified by a slight mixture with yellow and red, and as they were later greatly upstepped by assimilating the portion of the violet race. The indigo race. As the red men were the most advanced of the Sangik peoples, so the black men were the least progressive. They were the last to migrate from their highland homes. They journeyed to Africa, taking possession of the continent, and have ever since remained there, except where they've been forcibly taken away from age to age as slaves. Isolated in Africa, the indigo peoples, like the red man, received little or none of the race elevation which would have been derived from the infusion of the Adamic stock. Alone in Africa, the indigo race made little advancement until the days of Orvanon, when they experienced a great spiritual awakening. While they later almost entirely forgot the God of Gods proclaimed by Orvanon, they did not entirely lose their desire to worship the unknown. At least they maintained a form of worship up to a few thousand years ago. Notwithstanding their backwardness, these indigo peoples have exactly the same standing before the celestial powers as any other earthly race. These were ages of intense struggles between the various races, but near the headquarters of the planetary prince, the more enlightened and more recently taught groups lived together in comparative harmony, though no great cultural conquest of the world races had been achieved up to that time of the serious disruption of this regime by the outbreak of the Lucifer Rebellion. From time to time, all of these different peoples experienced cultural and spiritual revivals. Mansat was a great teacher of the post-planetary prince days, but mention is only made of those outstanding leaders and teachers who markedly influenced and inspired a whole race. With the passing of time, many lesser teachers arose in different regions, and in aggregate they contributed much to the sum total of those saving influences which prevented the total collapse of cultural civilization, especially during the long and dark ages between the Caligastia Rebellion and the arrival of Adam. There are many good and sufficient reasons for the plan of evolving either three or six colored races on the worlds of space. Though your ancient mortals may not be in a position fully to appreciate all of these reasons, we would call attention to the following. Number one, variety is indispensable to opportunity for the wide functioning of natural selection, differential survival of superior strains. Number two, stronger and better races are to be had from the interbreeding of diverse peoples when these different races are carriers of superior inheritance factors. And the Urantia races would have benefited by such an early amalgamation, provided such a conjoint people could have been subsequently effectively upstepped by a thoroughgoing admixture of the superior Adamic stock. The attempt to execute such an experiment on Urantia under present racial conditions would be highly disastrous. Competition is healthfully stimulated by the diversification of races. Differences in status of the races and of groups within each race are essential to the development of human tolerance and altruism. And then finally, homogeneity of the human races is not desirable until the peoples of an evolving world attain comparatively high levels of spiritual development. This paints a chapter of human history where a variant is introduced into the evolutionary timeline, and that variant is in the appearance of these diverse peoples of different shades of skin tone and also skeletal tone. And a little bit later on, they go on to say that there has been a great degree of amalgamation, and now there's been so much interbreeding, it's almost impossible. We all have a little bit of somebody else with minor distinctions. So it is fair to say that we've become much closer to being one race than we ever have been in our history. And much of it has been through trial and error. And they're making the suggestion that if we want to continue to improve culturally, then we should nourish the more superior strains of human development. And I think that's a pretty fair assessment and a pretty smart attitude to take. Some people today, though, they'll find it offensive, really. And it's a shame, because there's more that we can learn from our differences. Until next time, Godspeed and God bless.